It's April 18th, 2012. This is the Hell Yeah Show. Hello and welcome to the Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And we are bringing you best practices for fine living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery, what are we telling them?
There's no I in Temasil.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there is an eye in Timasillo.
At least not where you think.
Yeah.
I love that show so much.
We're going to be talking about Arrested Development later in the show. We've got some updates from the new Arrested Development production, whatever that ends up being. But before we get to that, Emery, what has been happening this week?
So, a lot of things. But first and foremost, the flashback Trojan that we talked about last week.
Yes, for Java.
That thing is no joke.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I got to be, you know, to be honest, I did not expect that there could be something as prevalent as Configure on Mac OS X. Like, there are a lot of compromised machines from flashback.
And I mean, are there estimates? Do you know a ballpark figure?
Someone hypothesized that it was like, you know, 500,000 or whatever.
Wow.
And so it would be like 1% of all Macs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Configure was estimated to be at. I personally have seen over 500 in the last week.
That's amazing. Huh?
Yeah.
That's really impressive. For something that
that's not even, I can extrapolate what other people are probably seeing because of that or whatever, but I know within arm's reach, you know, I've seen 500.
Well, I mean, and take that in contrast to the what I think has been relatively minimal amount of coverage that this stuff has gotten. I mean, well, I don't feel like people are super aware of this.
I don't know. I don't know if they are or not. I mean, certainly not in non-technical press.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I'm talking
about. The
majority
of people have no clue that this is even happening.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they might remember something like Code Red. Maybe they heard SQL Slammer once or something like that. But like, or Sasser. Like, the big named things like that, like the big events. This is, I mean, this could easily eclipse some of those.
Huh. Yeah, well, I mean, I guess install your Java updates. That's
I mean, there's really no reason for it. I mean, plus the vulnerability that Flashback and other exploit kits are using. I mean, it's something that was fixed a while ago. I get really frustrated, too, like when I'm reading people that have covered this in things like, you know, ZDNet or CNET, rather, or some fairly, like, widely known, well-regarded publications that just have really terrible coverage of it. And some of the vendors' response to this has also been horrible. Like, was it Kaspersky? I think Kaspersky had like a removal kit and it didn't work.
Wow.
Like some of the part of the package was like a shell script, and the shell script was supposed to go do things and like check and remove certain files and, you know, basically to move things out of the way if it found them. But the syntax in the shell script is wrong. Like, it's a very rudimentary mistake to make. Huh. It basically demonstrates that, like, they could not possibly have tested it because there's no circumstance that it ever would have worked.
Yeah.
So it's very frustrating to see. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating to see that kind of thing going on with it. But
wow.
I don't know.
Anyway. All right. Well, update there. Definitely check your Java updates.
Yep. And that goes for everybody. I mean, it's not just, Macs, but, I found it's very rare that I find a piece of Windows software that I really like.
Oh my God! Do not get me started on Windows software.
Like the argument that always was like, "Oh, you know, why do you have a Mac? There's no software." And I'm like, "Okay." Yeah. And I mean, like,
when I install the software, it doesn't install a Bing toolbar.
Yeah,
and
dozens of other things.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not showing me ads while I'm using the software. And
yeah, and not only that, but it's like, you know, it just, it doesn't, I don't know, there's a certain level or standard that some software doesn't really hold up to.
Right.
I mean, we've all used like really terrible looking things. It's usually, unfortunately, it's usually a cosmetic thing. But yeah, so usually if I'm like editing text files on Windows, I use either the there's a Windows port of Vim that I use.
Okay. Yeah.
That the GVim for Windows, and then I've also used Notepad++.
Yep, that is the one that I am most familiar with on Windows. Would be Notepad++.
When I'm working with Markdown, which is how I do a lot of things that I write, if it's like, you know, you have a client deliverable or email, even I compose in Markdown sometimes. There's a lot of things that I do with that, and I like having an editor that kind of caters to that. But there's one for Windows called Markdown Pad, and I really like it a lot. And the main thing that I like about it is that it doesn't have a really large interface. Like, there's not like, you know, there's no ribbon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no need to have a big interface for a Markdown editor. Yeah.
No. And it does a nice split, so you have like an auto preview on the side, which is kind of cool.
Nice.
Yeah, and yeah, I don't know. I really liked it a lot. It was free, and it's probably one of the better applications I've ever used for Windows. Which is, I mean, it's a very simple, but elegant because of that. I don't know. I really liked it a lot.
Cool.
And I thought I would talk about it because it's like I said, it's not something that I usually come into contact with.
All right. Well, link in the show notes.
Yeah, and for people, I guess I can't believe we just talked about a Markdown text editor without talking about what Markdown is, but
we are dozens of listeners. Of those dozens of listeners, I'm sure at least 70 to 80% know what it is, but
okay,
for the other 20 to 30,
yeah. So people are familiar with HTML, I think. So like when you go to an internet page in your browser, you have things that show up on your screen that were put there because of some sort of like markup language on text that tells your browser what to be showing you. Am I explaining this right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
So when things are written in that format, they're written in what's called HTML, which most people have heard of. And if not, that's okay. But instead of just text, there's going to be like information wrapped around the text that tells the web browser how to render the text on the display. So HTML is something that browsers understand. And then John Gruber and a couple other people along the way have like improved on this a little bit. Wanted an alternative markup so you don't have to write things in HTML, but you still want to be able to put it into HTML easily if you want to.
Yeah, well, because HTML looks really ugly. Like, if you know, writing out HTML, your text doesn't look...
It looks more like code than text.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So the idea behind Markdown is to write portable, accessible documents that can be read by a human being.
Yeah, yeah, without like having to render them in a browser or something like that. Yeah, you can just look at the raw text.
Yeah, and I think I've just gave like the worst description ever, but
yeah, that's fine. I mean, if you want more information, just Google Markdown, and there are plenty of examples online.
And in the show notes,
how it's used.
In the show notes in this section, you'll find a link to something called Dillinger.io. It's a website, and it's basically a Markdown text editor in a web browser, and it's pretty cool. So you can play around with it and see what you think. But I've lately been using Markdown for everything. Mainly because it's just so easy to get to and do other things with that I don't have to worry about, you know, is this going to be a Word doc or a PDF or a pub or whatever. You can just work on what you're working on to write it, and then you can do whatever you want with it because it's easy to parse into other things. So
cool. All right. So speaking of things you like a lot, right? Stuff you're just super excited about.
Yeah.
I hear you've been playing some Skyrim.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of games. So we got kind of like this big event going on in my house at the end of next month.
So you're trying to get all your gaming in first before your life gets sucked away.
Yeah. I've been playing some Skyrim, and I see why people like it. I think it's really cool, and I like the like the leveling system, and I like the trade system, and I like the talent system and skills and all that. Love all of that stuff. Things I absolutely hate are combat.
Uh-huh.
The lore.
Okay.
And the whole goddamn story. Cannot stand. I could not care less about what's going on. Like, the only thing that I find myself just rolling through quests and mashing the cross key on the gamepad like over and over again to skip conversations because I could not give a rip about any of it.
Right. Well, I mean these are all very valid criticisms.
Brutal bad.
Yeah. I think with regards to the story, I mean, a lot of Skyrim is about sort of forging your own story, right? Like taking your character where you want to take your character and then seeing what happens, you know, walking into a random village and just taking it from there. And usually that stuff works out fairly well. I'd say the main story, like the story that the game tries to lead you through, is not the most amazing thing in the world.
Okay,
but,
so you're saying I'm playing this wrong because I'm open to that.
I'm saying it's all your fault. Yeah. Okay. I guess what I'm saying is experiment more. You know, don't feel like you have to follow the paths that the game is laying down for you. Just don't play it like a normal game. Just play it like, you know, a virtual world or like a simulator. Just like go somewhere and, you know,
do whatever I want.
And do whatever you want. Yeah, exactly. And you'll be surprised. Like, that game is architected in a way such that you can go somewhere and do whatever you want, and it will actually, the game will actually typically turn that into a compelling experience or like some sort of mini one-off story. That sort of stuff tends to work out pretty well. You can just wander into a random town, and chances are there will be something going on there. You can start stealing stuff. You can kill someone. You know, the game has various ways wherein those sorts of actions can actually turn into their own stories. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I will try to be a little more brave with it.
Right.
But there are so many things about this though that are so tedious. Like, I mean, not only is the story kind of slow and not grabbing me, but then there's always like, I hate how close you have to be to things to use them.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, you got to be right up on top of stuff, which really stinks.
Are you playing
with,
in,
like,
in
20 urns
in first person or third person view?
Both.
Okay. I tend to like,
I prefer it in third. I don't like,
oh really? Okay. You, the urn opening thing, which, sounds like
I hate it.
That stuff is typically, I found, better in first person. Just because you can get a more precise.
Well, hang on a second though, because do you realize that like in some of the urns that you can't activate that are broken, if you roll the camera up, there will sometimes be stuff hidden on the ground.
It's okay. Here's the other thing, right? Forget about collecting everything.
Are you sure? Because I will go through these health potions pretty fast.
Well, okay. I mean,
on account of the combat system sucking so badly and me
regard to health potions, I mean, you're probably going to want to find some other ways to procure health potions than just, you know, finding them randomly.
Well, I've made a couple.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you get more into that or if you just, you know, buy a whole bunch of them, that sort of stuff. I mean, the problem with trying to investigate.
Don't you heavy sigh at me. What was that for?
Well, because I can picture how you're playing this game, right?
Okay.
I can picture exactly the strategies that you're applying to this game, and I think they are strategies that are designed to drive yourself crazy.
All right. So this is like my experience of like walking through every Best Buy ever and seeing the salesperson telling someone, you know, which HDMI cable they need.
Yeah, I guess. I think the less you think of it as a game, the less you think of it as like, I need to, you know, go through these objectives and make sure I collect these items and all that stuff. Like, the less you think of it like that, the more you think of it as just a world you are participating in. Okay. The happier you'll be, you know,
right.
Because you just need to forget all the small stuff and forget all the mechanic-y stuff and just sort of, you know, do crazy things. So,
I'm super pumped though about Diablo 3. Love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm having a ton of fun with it.
That you have been playing a lot of games. I don't have any Diablo 3 experience, so lay it on me.
Here. First of all, the two favorite things that I've enjoyed playing so far are the Barbarian and the Witch Doctor. Now, the Barbarian is just ridiculous. Like, it's a lot of fun to play. I've played two to level 10 or whatever now. The first one was named Chaney.
Okay. Yeah.
Chaney the Barbarian.
That's solid.
He was mighty, mighty. And then the other one was a lady barbarian that I named Badunkadunk.
These are so, very in-world, in-character names here.
Yes. Chaney and Badunkadunk the Barbarians. Tons of fun, though. Big, like, heroic leap stuff. Similar to, like, in WoW, like, where you can just kind of, like, jump, like, 100 yards into the middle of stuff and start beating out things. It's a lot of fun. And then the Witch Doctor has a lot of really cool things about it. And my favorite, though, is when one of the spells that you cast is essentially you hurling these big jars of spiders at people.
Oh, I've seen that one. Yeah, I've seen video of that.
Yeah, it's like putting people on bad mushrooms. But the other great thing about this game, though, is it's very simple to control.
Yeah.
I think it has huge appeal.
Yeah,
I think it's going to do really well for them.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I do not, as I said, have not actually hands-on played it myself, but I've seen some video of it, and it looks approachable, but still very deep and definitely interesting.
I'm a little concerned. Like, I don't know what it's going to be like to play it long term, but I mean, there were people that seriously are still playing Diablo 2 12 years.
Oh yeah,
later,
oh yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm not too.
I mean, I think the online stuff will probably make that that long-term value proposition a bit better. I don't know. Once you've seen everything.
Long story short, though, my endorsement of Diablo 3 is essentially that if I had any misgivings about the one-year World of Warcraft subscription that also included Diablo 3, that's completely erased.
Okay, all right.
If I play Diablo 3 for 40 hours in the next year, I will be happy.
All right. That's good, because I am on that same value proposition.
Yeah.
I was suckered into that as well.
You will be okay with it.
Okay. Can I get into the Diablo 3 beta? Did that come as part of that? I have not been keeping track.
If log into your Battle.net account, you might have it there.
Okay. All right. So speaking of that,
Mist of Pandaria
value proposition. Yeah. Part of that was also getting to play Mist of Pandaria, the new World of Warcraft expansion.
And that's pretty cool.
Is it?
If you like World of Warcraft, I think it'll be good.
I did like World of Warcraft.
I really hope that they're adding like this other aspect of the game where you can use like your pets, like your mini pets, to play these little battles.
Oh, the Pokemon aspect.
I've never heard of that. But
really,
there's a. I was really hoping that something like that. I'm really surprised, and I don't understand why they didn't make that a mobile app. You know, like, they were really, I think that game is something, like, if they're concerned about how sticky it is, because people are, like, leaving to play the Star Wars, or, you know, they're only going to be playing Diablo 3, which, what do they care? But if they're concerned about that, making something like that a mobile application where you're more constantly engaging with people, even out of the game, I think that would have been a really good move for them. I mean, as far as I understand it, they have, like, one of their Ten Commandments over there is that things that are in-game need to stay in-game. But then, like, with the mobile auction house stuff, I don't know if that's, like, where they want to...
I guess that is less of a taking it out of game than it is just an alternative way to access the in-game things.
Yeah, but, so I don't know how they perceive that, though, or what the...
Yeah.
If you know, what Blizzard thinks.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, but I mean, in general, though, you're having a fun time?
Yeah, like it a lot. There's some good changes that I've seen. Some of the things that I've been able to play with, I've really enjoyed. And
Does the panda stuff feel intentionally corny? I mean, is like...
You know, it's kind of funny.
Do they understand how ridiculous it is?
Yeah. if like a really super qualified yes.
Okay, okay.
It's definitely self-aware. I don't know if it's like, you know, some sense of irony or anything like that. Like, it definitely takes itself seriously. So it's not, I don't want to give the impression that, like, they half-ass it, because that's where I think you're headed with that.
Yeah.
Because if they take it too seriously, then that's dumb. But if they don't take it seriously enough and they, like, really half-ass it and under-deliver, then that's bad, too.
It's, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much a catch-22, yeah. It was a tricky question.
You're a horrible person. So, I really don't know how well it'll go. But I will say that it doesn't play off as like, really over-the-top to me. It doesn't bother me.
Okay, all right, cool.
Anyway. To be honest, I'm somewhat ambivalent. I don't think that the monks are going to ruin the game, though. I mean, in my opinion, Death Knights are 10 times worse than the monks in
Alright, well, I guess I don't have a big enough stake in the World of Warcraft at this point that I'm gonna get upset about whatever they're doing with it, so I'm just kind of sitting back here amused.
I haven't been playing seriously since Firelands dropped.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I pretty much haven't been playing competitively for about a year.
You've retired from your professional World of Warcraft career.
See, yeah. Don't you dare! I know it's ridiculous,
uh-huh.
But no, like the having a regular schedule and like a group of 25 people that I have a 2-night, 3-night commitment to. No, yeah. I haven't done that in like a year.
All right.
So I mean, and yeah, I would consider that somewhat serious and competitive. It certainly wasn't, anything special, but. It wasn't the same casual logging in and just hitting the random button that I'm doing now,
right?
I mean, which is fun. I mean, that's the thing. I am really happy at how well they managed to pull that off. Have you had a chance to even check that out?
No, I log in occasionally just to make sure I don't get kicked from my guild. That is the extent of my. Also, I unsubscribed from the Old Republic as well.
I did that too.
Yeah,
I didn't like it, but
yeah,
playing it.
I'm not playing it either. I mean, I'm not playing WoW either, but I'm getting Diablo 3 free for pretending like I'm playing it. So,
if the Old Republic ends up like having good add-on support, and I mean, God help me, a map client. That's really why I'm not playing it.
Okay.
I like being able to do what you were talking about, where like, you would log in and like do some of your trade stuff, and then kind of deal with that. I can't do that on my gaming machine because I'm rebooting it back and forth all the time.
Yeah.
Windows to play games, and it's dumb. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Well, outside of gaming, you got one more thing here, document scanning, which
so exciting.
Seems like it could be thrilling.
Yeah, absolutely. Breathtaking. Yeah, I don't know, tax season, digging through papers. I was wanting to get a document scanner. I really like the software called DevonThink for the Mac that does really excellent document indexing and search.
Sure.
So you can, like, I do it for, like, research stuff that I'm, anything that I'm remotely interested in, I clip into that. It's kind of like your own private Evernote. Some people are like, oh, well, why don't you just use Evernote? And it's like, well, because there's some things I don't want hosted with Evernote.
Right.
I don't know. So... DevonThink's great though, has really good search, has great OCR, so I wanted to have something that I could just be scanning paperwork into, but I needed a duplex scanner because we have like a multifunction HP at home, and it's good for like scanning the odd thing here and there, but you can't do a two-sided thing.
Yeah.
So like it would take me twice as long to do anything. So I ordered a Fujitsu scan snap and it gets here tomorrow.
Wow. All right.
We have an actual proper review of sorts.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
For all of our potential document scanners out there, that all those people who are really ready to start scanning.
It's kind of ridiculous to get something that specialized, but what's nice is you can put like a stack of mail on it and hit a button and away.
Oh, man. That's,
you know what I mean?
You got to take a video of that.
Yeah. And so it's definitely pretty sweet, especially like at tax time, because so many of like receipts.
Yeah, yeah.
And I gotta like dig through these receipts, but if I just scan them in, then I can search for the contents of that receipt later.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's awesome. So, cool. Anyways,
all right, nice. Well, you can keep us in touch with that process as it moves along. On my end this week, I got one thing, and I know you were excited to talk about this though. So it is an exciting thing. Sparrow, I think we've mentioned this on the show before, right?
Yes, I have some reservations about it. I've talked about the Mac OS X version, and I talked about the iOS iPhone version a few weeks ago.
Yeah, so this is an alternative mail client for Mac OS X. It's takes some cues from the Apple Mail, the mail.app interface. And from the iPhone Mail interface, but it's got a lot of its own stuff going on. Most importantly for me, I mean, it is certainly not as focused on keyboard commands as some other mail clients. Mailmate comes to mind as being way in that direction.
Yeah, but, well, you don't have to use them, but yes.
Yeah, but it is way more keyboard friendly and sort of fast interaction friendly than Mail.app is.
Sparrow and its assorted key bindings are designed to mimic the Gmail web interface key bindings.
Yes. Yeah.
So,
which of course are designed to mimic the classic Pine key bindings, right?
No.
No?
No.
I thought Gmail took a lot of the J and K to move through messages. Is that not from Pine?
No.
Really?
J and K is from the VI text editor.
Yeah, but what did Pine use?
J and K and P and N, so next and previous, and then up and down, and then So if you're like a total neckbeard Unix dork, you're probably rolling your eyes at my explanation of this, but I assure you, my street cred is perfectly fine in this regard. But the Pine used Pico as the text editor, so all of the keyboard commands for like navigation in Pine were N and P for next and previous.
There was okay.
K. J was jump to jump to a message number, and K would what does K do in Pine? I don't know if K does anything in Pine. Oh no, I think K is for the default key for the keyboard lock. Maybe.
Anyway, but I mean, I guess the overarching point here is that mail management is a lot easier when you can rapid fire a lot of keyboard commands.
When you can triage everything with like one hand.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That's really what it comes down to.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm enjoying Sparrow. Another thing I really like about it, in Mail.app, in the latest version, the Lion version of Mail.app, they removed the ability to have an activity view in the window such that I could see when it has completed checking for new messages. So I don't keep my mail client open all the time. I open it every few hours or so and then let it check for new messages. And in Mail.app, what I've been doing recently is I press Command-Option-0 to open up the activity window to see when it's finished checking for messages, and then I press Command-Option-0 again to close that once it's done checking for messages, which seems like a terrible way to monitor its progress in checking for new mail.
Why don't you just look at the mail activity window that attaches to the main browser?
It doesn't. At least for IMAP, it does not show you checking for new mail. It does not indicate fully that process. So Sparrow, this is actually really great. I can open Sparrow up, and there's a little conversations window, which is basically your messages window. And I can just scroll up in that window, and it does the refresh. And then I can just easily see, as soon as that refresh icon goes away, it has refreshed my inbox. So it's super sleek. I really, really like all the...
Like, it's really good for touchpads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I really like all the keyboard command stuff. I like the quick reply. I've been liking that a lot. It's got this thing where if you're reading a message, you just press the R key, and you can type a little, few sentences response, and then just press Apple Enter or Apple Return to send it off. And it doesn't open up a new window. It doesn't, compose a mail message. Normally, it just basically does a quick reply to the person who sent the message. It opens up a little box at the bottom of the message. It's all in the normal window. It's really nice, really fast, and sleek. So I like that as well. But
there's a couple of really good things about Sparrow. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there's, at the same time, a couple things. I still, little some little quirks here and there. Sorting such that the old messages appear at the top of the list and the new messages appear at the bottom does not appear to be something you can do. Which seems like a bit of an oversight to me. So that is unfortunate. You can,
well, come on, dude. That email client kind of forces you to do things its way all over the place.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Sparrow does not even let, does it let you change a font yet?
In messages you're viewing? No.
Yeah.
Okay. No. Not that I know of. So, it does.
It's very limited.
Yes. There are a lot of things I would like to customize about it, but I understand why they don't allow me to customize them. You know, they're certainly going for an experience. And for the time being, that experience is something that I'm appreciating, especially coming from Mail.app and being frustrated with a lot of different issues with Mail.app.
Can I coax you into trying MailMate?
I tried MailMate a bit. It's it is. I can totally see where MailMate is going.
I'll give you my key bindings.
Oh, that could be cool to have a preset list of, because I'm not sure I appreciated the default key bindings in MailMate.
I don't
know. I tried it. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I.
You think about it.
There. I really like Sparrow's icon, and I really hate MailMate's icon.
What's wrong with MailMate's icon? I love MailMate's icon.
It's so, like, bulky and ugh. But, you know, and that's not. I mean, that is a. I could change the icon if I really wanted to. But that, it's
have
sort
of a. Have
you
picked up a Sparrow for the iPhone?
No, have not tried that yet. That probably worth a try.
I really like it for the iPhone. They fixed my bug, too, I think.
Cool. All right. Nice. Yeah, that's the other thing, actually. I was looking online a bit because I was, you know, looking for some. Possible remedies to some of the quirks that I've been seeing in Sparrow, and seems like they're pretty responsive to community suggestions and bug reports and that sort of stuff. So for a $10 app, I was pretty impressed.
Oh yeah, I mean it's I don't feel bad about it. I don't use it on the Mac at all, but I have before, and if it gets to the point where I like it more, I'll use it.
Yeah.
I'm not mad about it, though.
All right. Cool.
It's great for what it is.
It is indeed. So, I'm trying it out. We'll see how long it takes me to get frustrated with it.
Why do I hate... I mean, email sucks, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of things that can make email better. We should do a... We did a show sort of about email. We should do a full show about, really, email. If you can manage it well, then it's at least... reasonably okay, but it never gets to the point where you feel like email is a positive influence on your life.
Yeah, well, it used to be, you know.
What do you mean? Oh, you mean like originally?
Yeah,
I guess email in its current state, email as people use it today, is does not feel like a positive influence on your life.
It's a dump truck.
It's a dump truck. Yeah. Yep.
It's a series of tubes.
That's why one of the things I like about Sparrow, like the quick reply thing, everybody should just use quick reply for everything. Like just, you know, be brief and say what you want to say and do not write pages and pages of text. Email is a medium, has some issues with it, but also the way people use email has some definite issues with it. So as I said, we should do a full show on this.
I think for our next segment.
You're as cold as ice, willing to sacrifice.
All right. I'm psyched now. That is that's got me pumped for this Arrested Development update.
It's too bad we can't get the rights to the Final Countdown.
Oh yeah. That would be a good touch.
Arrested Development update. I really like their idea for this show.
Okay.
So in order for them to do a reunion show, they've mentioned before that they wanted to do kind of like a one at a time, where are they now type thing.
Sure.
So they're filming this and doing it as an anthology, which I think is great. And it's also possible that they will release it on Netflix all at once.
That would be very cool. Yeah. And that's what Netflix did with, what was it, Lilyhammer? Their first original
didn't
TV
that get picked
series?
Up again, too?
Did they what?
I think that got picked up again.
Maybe it did. I don't know. I mean, but they released all the episodes at once, which I thought was really cool. Because it's like, yeah, we're on the internet now. You know, we'll no need to, you know, have a weekly time slot. Just, you know, here's a dump of all the episodes. Enjoy.
I'm really surprised that, like, South Park hasn't moved to the internet.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised.
I guess if it ever
that,
got
like,
canceled, it probably would. But
I am continually surprised by HBO's stringent, you know, their ability to stick to their cable centric payment model.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, they could
really
be making
don't.
A killing on the internet, you know, and instead,
what
all their
is
stuff is getting
on?
Pirated on the internet.
Yeah. And the HBO at home or HBO to go thing that they do, you have to have a cable subscription to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, if it was just pay, you know, $15-$20 a month, you have HBO via the internet. I mean, you know, they'd make a killing, right? Like they'd, like Netflix, they would replace, not completely replace, but they would definitely offset piracy. Of their shows, you know,
I
make it easy
like
for people.
An HBO app,
yeah,
for Apple TV.
Yeah, yeah,
that would be so awesome.
Yeah,
just browse everything. I don't know. They should have like a. I'm not saying they need to put like their whole library on, but at least like you know their original shows. I don't
sure.
know. That's something that I really don't understand.
Anyway,
I hope that the Netflix distribution with the rest of development works better.
Yeah, yeah. On the brighter side of things, we are seeing some cool stuff recently. We've got you know, rest development coming basically directly to an internet near you. So I'm excited.
Very exciting.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Other news in this past week or so, we've got continuing progress in the fight against mobile spam.
Oh, it's a
fight that is near and dear to your heart. I know.
Yeah, really, really hate the mobile spam. Not happy.
Yeah. So this, I guess there was a Slate article that came out profiling sort of what the current state of mobile spam is in the U.S. And it says in 2009, Americans received some 2.2 billion text messages that they identified as spam. And that was in 2009. So
that's a ton.
It's only gotten worse. Yeah. So you've got some tips here for people receiving mobile spam.
Well, yeah, there's an article that's going to be linked in the show notes. And, one of the interesting things about this is that I guess the operators are accepting forwarded samples. And if you forward a spam message to 7226, which would be like if you spelled out spam on a keypad, supposedly they care.
Huh. I mean, you know, probably so, once they receive a certain number of complaints, they care. But
yeah, I have no idea what they're doing with it.
Yeah. But hey, at least you
have
some
have, like,
easy method of recourse.
Yeah. And I think the general guidelines of remembering that if you don't want premium text messages, so you don't want the ones that charge you money, you need to call your operator and tell them that. And I guess some operators like Sprint have a system set up where you can set your account to only accept text messages from people in your address book.
Huh.
And then you have to like, you know, I don't know, upload a CSV file to their website every so often. I don't know how they keep track of any of that, but yeah. But the problem is definitely something that they're at least acknowledging at this point, which is good.
Yeah. Cool. And then you showed me this this picture of a SIM box.
Yeah.
Which is something very impressive to behold. You want to explain what this is?
Apparently when there's like phone banks that they're using for these illicit messaging operations, they have this, well, there's different models, I'm sure, but there's one linked that I thought was pretty good from the article. They call it a SIM box, and it's basically a big device that you plug GSM SIM cards into and attach that to like a mobile phone that can spam its way through messages using the mobile network, and then when the SIM gets blocked by the operator, it just rolls over to the next one. So there's like some logic inside this box. It's like Homer Simpson's auto dialer, essentially. Like, yeah, it's a robot that just trades out SIM cards and spams people.
Wow. I thought that was pretty ridiculous. And for only 500 and something dollars, you could you could have one of these for your very own. Yeah,
I thought that was very clever.
Okay, sure.
I mean,
I probably would have said sinister, but yeah.
Well, it absolutely is.
Yeah,
vile. Vile technology. But I gotta hand it to him, like, coming up with a way to rotate through SIMs like that, like, that's kind of I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's creative.
I can admire something horrible.
You can admire a good spam farm once in a while.
Yeah,
yeah, sure.
Looking at Skyrim, it's beautiful to look at from a distance, and then you get close and you're digging through jars.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
All right, well, on the upside of IT this past week, we've got some news about a privacy enhanced internet service provider.
Well, it hasn't started yet.
Okay,
but there's So Nicholas Merrill's trying. There's backing up a little bit. Like, one of the institutions of the internet for a long time was Calix. Always hosted some pretty controversial material. Seemed to be a good advocate. You'll remember a few months ago there was an ISP in California called Sonic that, like, challenged subpoenas for Jacob Applebaum's email.
Yeah, yeah.
The developer from Tor,
yep.
Who works on the Tor project. That was kind of a big publicized story, and it kind of shone a pretty bright light on the fact that ISPs generally just kind of roll over for this kind of thing.
Where, right.
Like, someone says, I would like to see so-and-so's email. They're like, okay. Or, like, Google or Yahoo or Facebook have, like, their lawful intercept portal, you know, where if someone wants access to someone's stuff, they just go to a website and they type in the menu and retrieve it or file the request. So there's definitely some concerns there. But, so this guy is looking to start an internet service that's inexpensive and prioritizes customer privacy. I mean, the article explicitly, you know, the quote was that they would use all legal and technical means to resist having to hand over information. And presumably it's not, I mean, without getting too, like, oh no, they're going to harbor sex traffickers and child pornographers. And that's obviously what people are going to use to say that this is a horrible idea and that no one wants to support it. But I think there's a pretty big case that you could make to say that American consumers benefit from having someone looking out for them and advocating on behalf of them. Not just to law enforcement to make sure that they do things properly and legally, but also to raise that standard and to ensure that there is at least someone a little bit more public than activists that are participating in that and can kind of help guide that legislation. Like, so many tech companies end up kind of, if they take like a hard stance on something like this, they might capitulate later and say, well, you know, okay, we got to do something to make these people happy. And I think it'd be nice to have my ISP, like, advocating on behalf of my privacy interests.
Yeah. I mean, my perspective on this is anything that moves the ISP market in, you know, towards a sort of more consumer conscious direction is probably a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, if they want to keep charging more and more money, I mean, this is the thing too, is that he's saying it's going to be cheaper than like what we're paying now.
I would be surprised, but I mean,
I don't know.
But to be honest,
I would be willing to pay the same or more.
Yeah,
for someone that I agreed with. I mean, there's a lot of things that we do. Like, there are decisions that we make all the time that influence policy. I mean, that's just the way that the economics work. I mean, if you're doing business with a company that sponsors something else or advertises on something else, like, there's a very circular relationship there where your business choice in terms of who you are buying anything from has an impact. I think it'd be really good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll see if it actually, in reality, if they can pull off all the stuff they're talking about here. But it's definitely going to be interesting to see this sort of angle enter the competition in the ISP market. So, cool.
It's definitely big news.
Yeah. All right. So more big news. Sort of. I don't know. I mean, Windows 8 has been running around the internet for a while now. I mean, the developer previews are out there. People are using it and commenting on it. There's lots of videos out there, both from Microsoft and from developers and just random people trying it out. But I guess you saw this a recent article about some...
I guess it was a former Microsoft employee that wrote it.
Yeah, yeah. That wrote up some very specific suggestions for making Windows 8 better.
With a somewhat controversial and leading title, if you ask me, of making Windows 8 better.
Right. Right.
Yeah, there's like, I thought some of the stuff that was brought up was really good.
Give some examples.
The account being required addition in Windows 8.
Yeah.
I think it's a little strange.
A Windows Live / Microsoft account.
I really don't like that.
Huh. I mean, you know, you...
But
you,
I don't like it for anything.
You buy an iPhone or iPad, you're plugging in your Apple account, right?
Yeah, I already had an Apple account.
That's yeah, that is unfair, though, right? You can't hold that double standard.
Well, here's the thing. If you buy an iPhone or an iPad or something and you have an Apple account, there's a benefit.
Okay. Yeah.
Whereas when you purchased the Batman game for me on Steam, and I had to install a Windows Live account to even play the game,
right?
That well, did you know you, the only get, benefit that I had to having it was that I could play it.
You get Xbox achievements for it.
Well, whoopee woo! I really don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it's I guess. The value in a Windows Live account is certainly for people who aren't into the Xbox or Zune networks, that value is certainly questionable. Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Yeah. There's just not really a huge draw for it. It's, I just see it as a hurdle, and it's a password that I'm going to forget. So I have to reset my account like almost every 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it's not like you need a Microsoft account for everything on Windows 8. I mean, this is just for, I think it was the store, for, you know, a couple other pieces.
Well, the store is obvious. I mean, yeah, I don't think anyone has an expectation of that working any other way.
But, you know, I think for the, I mean, there's an Xbox interface on it that requires a Windows account. I believe there's a few other things, but it's not like you're going to boot up your computer and it will not let you use your computer without a Windows Live account, you know. So,
what'd you think of the no easy way to view apps thing? Because I like the way that Metro works in terms of showing you what you're, you know, whatever you want to be working on or what you're going to be doing. I kind of liked that,
yeah.
But I don't know how. I mean, you can't view all the apps now, like in Windows 7. I mean, if you go to the Start menu, it's not like you can see everything at once.
Right. Well, I mean, so the issue here is basically you get this panel of app icons, and then if you want to see the icons that aren't displayed, you need to go into this other menu that is View All Apps, and it's not super easy to do you know, frequently. I think that's fine. I mean, think about
pretty sure that Metro is going to make some people's heads explode, though.
Probably. Yeah, but like, think about the number of, you know, apps that you actually use on a regular basis. Probably fits on that Metro UI screen.
On my Windows machine at work, there are three applications.
Yeah.
Chrome and Outlook. And what's the third one?
I mean, I recently took my dock in OS X and pared it down to, like, I think I'm down at five applications. I've got Quicksilver and I can launch things from that. And, you know, you can do that in Windows too. But the point is, like, the stuff you're using frequently, the stuff you need that really quick access to, probably fits on that Metro home screen, I'd imagine. So I don't think that's a huge deal, the view all apps thing. I mean, yeah, as you were saying, on Windows 7, you've got to navigate through those nested menus of the start menu anyway. So it's not like it's it's not like it's that dramatically different. It's just probably going to throw people for a bit of a loop. We'll see. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of that stuff, right? There's going to be a lot of stuff where people are used to whatever the traditional Windows way of doing things is, and they're going to be thrown into this Windows 8 with Metro UI, and as you say, their heads are going to explode.
It's such a big change.
Yeah. It is really daring. I mean, this is either going to go over really well for them, or this is going to tank pretty terribly. So.
Well, I don't know that that's necessarily the end of the world either for them, because I really do think that Windows 8 needs to do well for them.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also know that there are a ton of people that are still running Windows XP.
I see it all the time. Yeah, yeah.
So
and Windows 7 is a great operating system. I mean, I expect that will continue to be a standard even through Windows 8.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess it's not entirely make or break. It's not like they're forcing people to go to Windows 8, but yeah. I don't know. I mean,
maybe they shouldn't call it Windows 8.
No, I think that's probably wise, right? Because I mean, you if possible, you want to push people in that direction. You want people to try it out, and ideally, you want people to like it a lot better. So you kind of want to pitch it as this is the new experience. You know, this is the next step in the Windows life cycle. You know, this is an upgrade. This isn't like an alternative. But whether people will actually follow that line of thinking in reality or not remains to be seen.
I think from what I've seen of it so far, I think it's good. I just don't know that it's something that people are going to latch onto. I'm especially interested in what they're doing with the ARM stuff. So instead of working on like traditional Windows desktop computers, it also can run on a different CPU architecture for smaller devices like tablets and things like that. But I'm curious if that parity between the two hardware platforms is something that they'll be able to do as well as they would need to.
Yeah, I mean, one size fits all is hard, or one interface fits all sizes is hard.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is that they have like an extra degree of difficulty here because Windows 8... It's supposed to be a unified platform for mobile devices, for tablet computers, for notebooks, laptops, desktops, workstations. Like, it's not only is it Intel and ARM, but it's also for half a dozen different form factors.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big challenge. It's gonna be a big deal.
Yeah.
And they're certainly, I mean, you know, they're placing their bet on it. So they're behind this full force. So we'll see how it develops. Is there, I don't actually know, is there a launch date yet? Do we know?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I have not heard anything about specifically about a launch date, but yeah, we'll see. Anyway, and then to conclude the show, do we have time to, are you prepared
enough?
We can
do a brief one.
For this final segment here, we've been waiting to do this for a few weeks here since Emery first came up with this idea. What is tell them what this segment's all about?
We're gonna try a new segment this evening. It is a segment that we call Drag Queen or Android. So I'm sure people are familiar with Android handsets and some of the very, shall we say, boisterous naming convention that they have.
The Samsung Galaxy Inspire S3G Nexus. I don't know. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, they're very glitzy, very glamorous.
Uh-huh.
So then it occurred to me that a lot of these a lot of these mobile devices have names that sound like stage names for drag queens. And I thought it was awesome.
Sure. Yeah, it's
therefore
very open-minded of them.
I'm delighted. So I have a master list of a whole slew of handsets and drag stars, performers that date back to the 1800s to present day.
Wow.
Now, the degree of difficulty is substantially higher for this game for one main sticking point, which is that most drag stars have two full, like a full name, a first name and a last name. Very few of them have just a single name.
Okay.
So what I've had to do is I will give one word that is either an part of an Android handset or part of the name of a famous drag star.
So and I get to guess which is which.
Yeah.
Can it be both? So are there ones that are both?
There might be one.
Okay.
On both lists.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. So the first one we're going to start with, and this is kind of an easy one. Divine.
Both.
Sorry. Divine is a drag queen who is more famously known for, like, I want to say, was it a dozen? Somewhere between 10 and 12 movies for John Waters.
Wow.
Very, very famous drag queen.
All right.
And that's it for this week.
I got it wrong. You got to give me another one.
Okay. Well, I wasn't prepared for more than one.
Oh, no.
Okay. So I don't want to use up one of the good ones.
Oh.
Okay, I got one.
All right.
So, drag queen or Android? Magic.
Android.
Absolutely correct.
Yes.
I don't have a ding.
All right. That's fine. One win, one loss. I'll take it. Very good.
You're one for two.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's...
I was going to lead off with Nook.
Nook. That's... That's not a bad one. All right. Well, we will probably have more installments of Drag Queen or Android on further episodes.
I hope so. I have a lot of fun picking up the name.
But
it gives me an excuse to look for drag queens on Wikipedia.
Yeah, sure. If you have suggestions for possible... drag queens or Android devices that we should include, you can email them to show@hellyad.com along with all of your other wonderful comments. You can visit us online at show.hellyad.com. And Emery, it sounds like you want to say something.
On the Twitter machine. You may find us by sending us a tweet at hellyadshow, twitter.com/hellyadshow, or follow the helpful links on our internet homepage site.
Indeed. All right. Well, that will do it for this episode of the Hell Yeah Show. We will see you next week.
Don't shake the baby.